Now, this phrase, Hamiltonian means to accomplish Jeffersonian ends, seems nonsensical, and to many critics, as we will see, it is nonsensical. You cannot wed Hamilton and Jefferson. But Crowley sought to do so. And those who endorse active state liberalism owe an enormous intellectual debt to him. He argued that governmental action must create the conditions of liberty by guaranteeing everyone a rudimentary economic equality. Now, again, we've seen elements of this in the later thought of Roosevelt. You'll see it in Wilson, who we haven't looked at here because we simply don't have the time. And you'll see it in fleeting fashion in Franklin Roosevelt in the next lecture. Crowley had an enormous impact on the development of active state liberalism. In his work, we find the genesis of a fully developed theory of active state liberalism. We find the genesis of the modern welfare or administrative state. So what is the basis? What is the premise from which he's working? What is this promise of American life with which Crowley leads his argument? And he lays it out. The American democracy has confidently believed in the fatal prosperity enjoyed by the people under the American system. In the confidence of that belief, it has promised to Americans a substantial satisfaction of their economic needs. And it has made that promise an essential part of the American national ideal. What the wage earner needs, and what it is in the interest of a democratic state he should obtain, is a constantly higher standard of living. If it is to earn the loyalty of the wage earners, the state must recognize the legitimacy of this demand and make the satisfaction of it an essential part of public policy. The American state is dedicated to such a duty not only by its democratic purpose, but by its national tradition. So far as the former is concerned, it is absurd and fatal to ask a popular majority to respect the rights of a minority when those rights are interpreted so as to seriously hamper, if not to forbid, the majority from obtaining the essential condition of individual freedom and development, viz., the highest possible standard of living. So this is the promise of American life, a constantly improving standard of living, a promise that is essential to the American national ideal. And you can trace this back to the early colonists, to Crèvecoeur. In America, you can invent yourself. You can improve yourself. You can improve your station. Everybody has this chance. So Crowley links across the generations in that way. From Crowley's perspective, this is not an ahistorical contrivance. At the time of the founding, when, for example, Crèvecoeur was writing, the existence of space allowed the promise to be kept without governmental action. A consistently rising standard of life, material well-being, is possible in the founding era because there is the frontier. There's always some place to go, some place to start anew. The existence of space made this possible in the beginning. The problem is that space is drying up. The fact, of course, he says, is that the great majority of Americans were getting a square deal as long as the economic opportunities of a new country had not been developed and appropriated. Individual and societal interests did substantially coincide so long as so many opportunities were open to the poor and untrained man, and as long as the public interest demanded first of all the utmost celerity of economic development. But the economic development of the country resulted inevitably in a condition which demanded on the part of the successful competitor either increasing capital, improved training, or a larger amount of ability and energy.